In his book, Wild at Heart, John Eldridge tells of a river winding through southern Oregon. It runs down from the Cascades to the coast. It was a river that he had spent countless hours as a boy, playing and fishing and swimming. He loved the name of the river. It was the Rogue, for it fit him as well. One summer, he took his wife and his boys to share with them the river. There is a rock that juts out over the river where the canyon narrows and the Rogue deepens and pauses before it rushes out to the sea. High rock walls on both sides, and on the north is Jumping Rock. I wonder what you do on Jumping Rock. Jumping Rock is perched above the river at about the height of a two-story house plus some. Tall enough you can slowly count to five before you hit the water. There is built into the human brain something that makes every cliff seem twice the height as you look down, and everything within you says, don't even think about it. So you don't. You just hurl yourself off the rock, out into the middle of a canyon, and you free fall for what seems forever. And all your senses are on alert as you plunge into the cool water. When you come back up, all who are standing around waiting are cheering because you did it. Well, John and his whole family jumped that day. After that first jump, you have to do it again, partly because you can't believe you did it the first time, and partly because the fear has given way to the thrill of freedom. Has fear given way to freedom in your life, allowing you to live a single-minded, nothing else matters nearly as much, I'm all in for Christ kind of life? Has fear given way to freedom? Turn with me in your Bibles. We're going to read Deuteronomy chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. Deuteronomy is where God is speaking through Moses to the children of Israel. They're getting close. They're getting close to going into the promised land. It's 40 years of history that goes back to when the 12 spies were sent in, and two said, yes, we can do this because the Lord said we could. And 10 of them said, oh no, because our sight says we can't. And Moses is just reminding them of some things. Deuteronomy 8, verse 1. Moses said to them, all the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your forefathers. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell with these 40 years. Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God was disciplining you just as a man disciplines his son. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs flowing forth in valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without scarcity, in which you will not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and gold multiply, and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out from the land of Egypt. Out of the house of slavery, he led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who has given you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. It shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you today that you will surely perish, like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you. So you shall perish because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God. Has fear given way to freedom? Has fear of all that the world can do to you, at you, against you, given way to the freedom to live a single-minded, devoted life to Christ? Fear gives way to freedom by realizing spiritual matters are more important than physical. Physical food is important, but spiritual food is more important. Moses reminds the people to keep God's commands, not as a duty or as a burden, but as means to the desired end of possessing the land. All belief and all behavior is based on the covenant relationship. And that covenant relationship is summed up by one word, and that is command. What God commands us, we are to keep. If we don't keep his commands, we aren't really in covenant relationship with him. If we don't do what he says, then we don't care about him. And that's what Moses is reminding them of. That they are to keep God's commands. That we are to keep God's commands. So be careful to do all God commands. Moses reminds the people of God's work in the past. God was at work in them to make them realize spiritual matters are more important than physical. And if you've read the New Testament, it's right after Jesus has taken John and Peter up to the mountain, and Elijah and Moses have come, and it's the great transfiguration of Christ, that Jesus gets led out into the wilderness for 40 days, and he's tested, and he quotes this verse there in Deuteronomy 8, that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. What Jesus was saying is what Moses was saying is what I'm trying to say to you is that all of God's commands are about his covenant. And if we don't keep his commands, then we don't care about the covenant. And so we are commanded to do this. But Moses tells him something else. And I got to tell you, I read this passage. Those of you who have used the chronological study Bible know that you basically are reading through the story. Well, I read this back a couple, 3 weeks ago. I'm out of Deuteronomy now, however long it takes, however many weeks it takes to get through Deuteronomy. And this is what's been reverberating in my heart and mind for a couple, 3 weeks now. It's what Moses says to them. He said, he humbled you and let you be in need to show you what was in your heart. to test us, to test you. Even in times of testing, educating, God provided. First, it was manna. You've heard this, I'm sure, but manna is an interesting type of bread. The word manna in the Hebrew literally means, what is it? Because all of a sudden, here it was, God was providing it for them, and they didn't know anything about it. You can't go back to that part of the world now and find manna because there's no more manna anywhere. And all of a sudden, there it was. They needed something to eat. And all of a sudden, there it was, and they're saying, what is it? Then he talked about how for 40 years they walked and their shoes didn't wear out and their feet didn't swell and their clothes didn't wear out. Now, I don't know about you, but if you got in that part of the world where it's hot and dry and you didn't have much water, your body would do like mine does when I go to Honduras, because my body immediately starts shouting, save every drop! And my ankle and my feet swell. And theirs didn't. And their shoes didn't wear out and their clothes didn't wear out. Everything God was doing, he was doing to prove to them that spiritual matters are more important than physical matters. Several years ago, there was a letter written to the British Weekly. Dear Sir, letter to the editor. Dear Sir, it seems ministers feel their sermons are very important and spend a great deal of time preparing them. I have been attending church quite regularly for 30 years, and I have probably heard 3,000 of them. To my consternation, I discovered I cannot remember a single sermon. I wonder if a minister's time might be more profitably spent on something else. For weeks, a storm of editorial response raged. Finally ended by this letter. Dear Sir, I have been married for 30 years. During that time, I have eaten 32,850 meals, mostly of my wife's cooking. Suddenly, I have discovered I cannot remember the menu of a single meal. And yet, I have the distinct impression that without them, I would have starved to death long ago. Physical matters are important, but spiritual matters are more important. Someone has said that God sometimes has to take away all the things we have used to meet our own needs so we can learn to depend on Him alone. Has He done that in your life? Maybe He's doing it now. When He's testing you, what's He finding in your heart? What is in your heart? Many of you know the challenge or the thing in front of us that God is using to test me. And I'm not sure I'm very pleased with what He's showing me is in my heart. As I was thinking about it and praying about it yesterday, I used the word fair in my mind. Lord, that's just not fair. Well, I got to tell you right now, I don't want the Lord to be fair. I don't want Him to be fair with me. Because I understand the sinful nature that is still within me. I don't want Him to be fair. And I've realized too that sometimes He uses things to get our attention. I heard somebody talking about time out this morning. I don't believe in time out. Well, I don't know if I did either. My three kids would say, you didn't believe in time out. But I said this, we used whatever it took to get the attention of the child. Well, that's what the Lord does. That's what the Lord does. And sometimes he puts us through trials. He puts us through testing. He puts situations in our hearts and in our lives to show us what truly is in our heart. So as you think back over your life, as you think back maybe over your last week, What is the Lord showing you? What's He dealing with you? Do you realize spiritual matters are more important than physical matters? Have you ever been in a discussion and you heard them and they use, they need to do this. It's, you know, if they wouldn't do that, it's all their problem. Well, we're a part of that, aren't we? And we need to realize that we are prone to the thinking our society leans toward. I become amazed at herd mentality and herd behavior. Sometimes what God is doing in our lives is not always pleasant, but it's always with a purpose. It's to show us that spiritual matters are more important than physical matters. Do you spend comparable time and energy on spiritual food as you do on physical food? What is God doing in your life? Fear will give way to freedom. Fear gives way to freedom by remembering life's provisions are from God's hand and not your own. Pride and forgetfulness tend to go together. Look what I did. Oh, no, you didn't. Verse 10 is where the encouragement to praise God for life's provision begins. He says, "When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which He has given you." Bless the Lord. Say something good about God for what He has done. I realize that I could have shown the clip from Jimmy Stewart's Shenandoah movie that we showed back whenever it was. We tilled the land. We planted the seed. We harvested the crop. We did it all, but we thank you just the same. My goodness. My goodness. Pride and forgetfulness tend to go together. The goodness of the land, its produce, would tend to lull the people into a sense of complacency and self-sufficiency. And jobs and employers and retirement accounts do the same. And the chief danger for them was that they would forget their history, what God has done in their lives. And in pride of the moment, they would forget their story of election and redemption. Remember, God is your supplier. My dad was an appliance repairman most of my growing up years. You could give him a make and a model, and he could tell him what the machine was doing, and he could tell you how to fix it. I'll never forget one time when we were using a refrigerator that he had resurrected. It began to do something a little unusual, wasn't working quite right. So I called him up, and he said, "Now, there'll be three screws, and there'll be two screws, and you do this, and you do that, and you do this." And it was exactly what he said. How does he remember all that? How did he remember all that stuff? Only if you could remember so well that all you have, all you will ever be, is from God's hand and not your own. So how good of a historian are you? How are you at remembering? As you think on your life, does it cause you to trust God more? You know, there have been times in our lives that didn't have much. Didn't know how the next month would be covered. Didn't know how this would work out or that would work out or this need met or this obligation carried through. And yet God met every one of them. So why am I doubting Him now? Why am I using words like fair and all those kinds of things? Maybe you're prone to panic at the next trial. Today is is God's tool to use to prove to you that you can trust Him for tomorrow. Be careful not to immediately label increase as blessing and challenges as a curse. For the world clamors for your attention to bring things that may ultimately pull you away from the Lord. Fear gives way to freedom. Fear gives way to freedom by remembering it is all a result of God's grace. There is a reciprocal dynamic at play in what Moses is dealing with the people. That covenant produces blessing, and blessing proves the reality of covenant. But all of it is a result of grace. There is not anything that God has ever done for you that you deserved. It's grace. It's grace. It's grace. Blessing and covenant are two sides of the same coin. Covenant, commands, keep them. That's the other side. The other side is blessing. One word of caution, don't forget Jesus. And that's what he was saying to them. That when you get in the land and everything's going good, and you have more than you can eat, and everybody's well, and everything's just going the way you want it to, don't forget and go after other gods. For if you do, you perish. You perish. I learned to love gardening when I went to work for the greenhouse because there is something neat and wonderful to watch stuff grow. And while I can set up conditions for best, most productive growth, I cannot make or cause anything to grow. God does it. It's grace. That's grace. So step back for a moment and consider grace. What you desperately need but don't deserve, that's grace. Has grace been poured out in your life? Has it been poured out in your life? All of everything that you consider a blessing is a result of God's grace. Are you remembering your relationship with Jesus? Eldred says he wants to live his whole life like jumping off that rock. Scared to death and going to do it anyway. He wants to love with much more abandon and stop waiting for others to love him first. He wants to hurl himself into a creative work worthy of God. He said, life is not a problem to be solved, it is an adventure to be lived. That's the nature of it and has been since the beginning when God set the dangerous stage for this high-stakes drama and called the whole wild enterprise good. He rigged the world in such a way that it only works when we embrace risk as the theme of our lives, which is to say only when we live by faith. Are you living by faith? The only alternative is sight. You're either living by faith or you're living by sight. Are you single-minded in your devotion to Christ? Or are you easily sidetracked? Is your fear giving way to freedom to be single-minded in living for Christ?